One of the largest Star Wars fan collections in the world is coming to Kosai. Unofficial Galaxies opens on May 10th, and this is a one-of-a-kind exhibition with iconic characters, props, legendary ships, costumes, and behind-the-scenes secrets. It's going to be a must-see whether you're a hardcore Star Wars fan or just curious about one of the most famous sci-fi franchises of all time. Unofficial Galaxies is coming to Kosai starting on May 10th, so get your tickets now at Kosai.org.
Today's episode of Expanded Perspectives is sponsored by Gaia.com. Help find your own truth by exploring perspectives you won't find in the mainstream on some of life's biggest mysteries. Whether it's grand conspiracies, breakaway societies, UFOs, ancient civilizations, lost wisdom, as well as the paranormal, all at your fingertips. Stream videos anywhere from your living room or on the go with access to over 7,000 titles. All available to you with a monthly plan for only $9.95 a month. If you sign up now, the first month is only 99 cents. And there are multiple plans to choose from, including a three-month plan and an annual plan. If you enjoy expanding your perspective, then you'll enjoy Gaia.com. Gaia.com. Gaia.com.
There, friends, and thanks again for joining us here on Expanded Perspectives. It's me, Cam Hale, and as always, the humbug, the Christmas Grinch himself, sitting across the table from me is Kyle Filson. Philly-o.
Yes, sir.
How you doing there, bud?
I am doing spectacular. I feel good. Got a lot of energy today for some reason.
You look like hell.
Yeah, well, I appreciate that. Yeah, no, I'm doing good, man. I'm glad to be here. What about you?
Oh, man, I'm ecstatic. I'm ecstatic because my favorite UFC fighter, and I know it's hard to say your favorite, and I sound like a child. Oh, it's my favorite baseball player. I got everything. No, dude, he's one of my favorite, if not the, current UFC fighters. Donald Cowboy Cerrone won this weekend. He won his fight against Matt Brown. The card was amazing. Hats off to him. Hey, Matt fought a great fight. Tim Kennedy got beat. Kind of bummed about that.
I think the fight of the night was the Cub Swanson Duho Choi fight.
That was unbelievable.
Back and forth, it looked like a Rocky movie.
That was unbelievable.
Like, if they did a reenactment of that and made a movie or something, I would be like, yeah, this is cool and all, but that ain't real. Nobody really does
Nobody does that.
They did. They just back and forth, just trading leather.
That was...
three rounds.
Yeah, it was a wonderful, wonderful fight.
Like that, 3 5-minute rounds.
Yeah, they weren't messing around. And then, of course, the main event, Max Holloway, he got the interim title. Him and Pettis fought, Anthony Pettis, the Showtime, and they fought, and it was a great fight. I really wanted Max to win. Nothing against Pettis, but I'm just a big Max Holloway fan. I wanted him to win. And the funniest thing was his statement afterwards, because folks, for you that aren't into MMA, he's been trying to get a fight with the champ. The champ got beat by Conor McGregor, and then Conor moved up in weight, and they stripped Conor of that title at 45, and they gave it back to Jose Aldo. Well, now Max Holloway is starting a thing on Twitter, and if you want to get involved, it's hashtag where is Jose Waldo, because he can't seem to get him to fight him. So me and Kyle laughed hysterically at that part. But anyhow, it was a wonderful night of fights, and Kyle and I had a little discussion going on, and I'm going to ask you now on air. I'm going to put you on spot.
Okay.
With the Christmas season coming up and all the holidays, what is your favorite holiday drink. Now, I know a lot of people, they love eggnog. They love like the spiced tea. They love the hot cocoa. My wife makes a thing called an almond joy when her and her sister and sister-in-laws and all of them get together.
Yeah, what's in that?
Man, it's booze. Tastes like an almond joy. It's got like a coconut flavor. I can't tell you anything outside of that. I don't drink them.
I'm not a big fan of coconut.
I have my woes. Sometimes I am, sometimes I'm not. But anyway, so what's your favorite drink, you think, of the holidays?
Holiday drink. I would say, I'd have to say for the holidays, I'd probably say eggnog, but I like my eggnog with a little rum in it.
Oh, so you, there you go. You like the manly eggnog.
Yeah, I like a little Sailor's Jerry spilt in there, or a little Captain Morgan, you know.
A little spilt in there.
Yeah, oops.
Yeah, I'm pretty simple. I'm a big hot cocoa kind of guy.
I like hot cocoa.
But I don't like it too hot. You know what I mean? I like mine like, that's the way I like coffee. I almost like to pour my coffee. Yeah.
You put little marshmallows in it?
Oh, yeah. Yeah. My daughter made homemade marshmallows over the weekend.
Oh, man.
Like homemade. She's got a whole pan of them. I've not got into them yet, but I can already tell I'm going to need an insulin shot. I've been staring at them. Half of that pan's not going
to
make it.
You should have brought some of that over here to the studio.
I know, it's my bad.
You can put it here in my Yeti cup.
The problem with that whole thing is I want to test it before I give it to you. I don't want it to be bad, and you'd be like, man, it tastes like hell.
Well, speaking of Christmas, it's that time of year again. And who comes to your house on Christmas, Cam? Santa Claus. Now, many cultures across the world celebrate Christmas, and many of those recognize Santa as the jolly fellow who brings the good little girls and good little boys gifts on Christmas Day. And, of course, like you experienced many times, you got coal on Christmas for being naughty.
More than I can count.
But there's other legends out there and other stories, and they're pretty cool. And this comes from Dana Matthews over on Who40.com, and it's about the Christmas witch, La Befana. Have you ever heard of this woman? I haven't either.
No, I have not heard of this. I don't remember it, but yeah.
Yeah, it's pretty interesting. Let me tell you about it. The story of La Befana begins in southern Italy when the biblical Magi, a.k.a. the three wise men, paid her a visit on their way to attend the birth of Jesus. Now, it turns out they just needed to stop and ask for a few directions, and La Befana, being the eternal homemaker she was, decided to let the wandering wise men take refuge with her for the night. And as she was the nicest, most well-kept house in the entire village, the men accepted. And in thanks, they asked the old woman to accompany them to witness the birth of Christ. Much like any sane woman would, if three strange men just showed up and asked her to wander off into the wilderness with them, La Befana declined, citing she had way too much housework to take care of. Well, a few days later, La Befana realized she may have made the biggest mistake of her life, and that witnessing the birth of humanity's savior might be kind of important. Now, La Befana headed out into the night in search of travelers, but unfortunately, her sense of direction was worse than the wise men. She never did manage to find the birthplace of Jesus, and she since spent the last 2,000 years wandering the planet, searching for her destination, leaving toys for all the good little children, and coal, onions, and garlic for all the bad ones. Now, that's the nice version of this story. There's another. It's a darker version of the witch's history. In this other story, she's depicted as a mother who has gone mad with the death of her only son. Now grief-stricken, she hears the story of the birth of Jesus and leaves her home, convinced that he is the reincarnation of her dead son. Eventually, after many weeks of searching, La Befana finds the infant and gives him all of her deceased son's earthly possessions. Jesus reciprocates the kindness and blesses the woman, making her the honorary mother of every child in Italy. So she became so overjoyed, La Befana travels the country now, gifting all the little children presents during the holiday season. So just like Santa, they say, La Befana also appreciates a snack when she comes by your house. But unlike Santa or old Saint Nick, who likes milk and cookies, she prefers bottles of wine, boiled sausage, and a side of broccoli.
Is that my sister-in-law that's coming around? That old yaya coming up over there like, hey, leave me a bottle of wine. Some boiled sausage, yo. Come on.
And a side of broccoli.
And a side of broccoli.
So, I mean, other cultures
have the colon's toothbrush.
Yeah, that's right. They have these same kind of legends that are similar, where there's always something coming and giving gifts to children. I just think I like that instead of milk and cookies, it's just a
broccoli and sausage.
And wine. That is so odd. La Befana, folks.
I love it.
So if you are from Italian descent, you may know this story that I'm talking about. If not, and you'd like to start something new, a new tradition in your house, start celebrating La Befana instead of Santa Claus.
Don't leave wine out around my family, the ladies in my family, or the ladies in Kyle's family. You can't leave it out around like milk is much safer. As long as we're getting together on a holiday and we're going to do some holiday chit-chat, I got something here. Look, I'm a big fan of kale, but I'm going to have to lay this on y'all. Kyle, you're going to love this. Researchers, this comes from The Independent. Researchers discover seaweed that tastes like bacon and is twice as healthy as kale.
There's no way any grass tastes as good as bacon.
These are researchers at Oregon State have patented a new strain of seaweed that tastes like bacon when it's cooked. Yeah, it says it's a form of red marine algae. Now, look, let me ask you this. Is it algae or algae?
I say algae.
Yeah, because, you know, I've heard it different pronunciation. I don't know.
I've heard color and couleur, you know? I mean, there's different pronunciations based on where
you're from. Couleur in your coffee, right?
Yeah, I guess.
I don't know. What is that? Yeah. Anyhow, it says it looks like translucent red lettuce. It also has twice the nutritional value of kale, and it grows very quickly. According to Oregon State researcher Chris Langdon, his team started growing the new strain while trying to find a good food source for edible sea snails, or abalone, a very popular food in many parts of Asia. And the strain is a new type of red algae that normally grows along the Pacific and Atlantic coastlines. But Langdon realized this, that he had his hands on something with a lot more potential when his colleague Chuck Toombs visited his office. He said he caught a glimpse of this, and Toombs said he thought the bacon seaweed had the potential for a new industry in Oregon. He told the Oregon State in a press release that Toombs then began working with the university's Food Innovation Center, which created a range of foods with the seaweed as its main ingredient. Now, Langdon said that no U.S. companies grow red algae for people to eat, but the seaweed has been consumed by people in Northern Europe for centuries. Now, Langdon told OSU this, that this stuff is pretty amazing. When you fry it, which I have done, it tastes like bacon, not seaweed, and it has a pretty strong bacon flavor.
Wow.
Yeah, and he says that it states that no analysis has been done yet to find out whether commercializing the bacon seaweed would be practical, but the team thinks that vegan and vegetarian markets may be interested. Now, Toombs' MBA students are hard at work on making, get a load of this, a plan for a new line of specialty foods. So this is growing, pardon the pun, in the classroom as we speak. So these people are growing. And then he's got his students going, look, let's figure out a way to make this into a business. Now, it does state this in the article that some red algae is sold in the U.S. right now, but it's a different strain from the one harvested there at Oregon State. Now, Langdon says he's growing about 20 to 30 pounds of this stuff a week. And he plans to triple the production of growing it. And here's what's funny. You know what makes me think about that when you talk about growing it in Oregon?
What?
Seth, our buddy at Mecca Grade. Folks, for all you home brewers out there, we got a good friend of ours that listens to the show. Seth sent some stuff in here. Look, it's Mecca Grade Estate Malts. It's another big place there in Oregon. And it's beautiful. The pictures are beautiful. Go to MeccaGrade.com and look at it. It's beautiful. And I didn't have any idea Oregon had this kind of farmland. But, you know, what do I know about Oregon? Absolutely nothing. I thought it all had trees and mountains. And then he sends these pictures. Oh, it's beautiful. But that's what made me think. Oregon's not messing around, okay? No. They're going to be growing algae. So Seth's going to start growing algae next. He's going to have it in the big malting rooms, big trays of red algae. So we're going to have awesome beer making, and then we'd be able to fry up algae to taste like bacon. Sign me up.
I would love to taste this seaweed. I want to see if it really tastes like bacon. Look, because if it isn't, it's healthier and everything.
I'm all for it.
But I will say, I'm from the state of Texas, and trying to replace actual bacon with seaweed, I don't know that's going to work around here.
Well, how would you not? You can't have a BLT. It's like an SWLT.
Trust me, do not order BLT.
Right?
Yeah, right?
But I would eat it. I'm for sure.
I would definitely try it. Oh, yeah, I would definitely try it.
I want them to just, I'm going to have to message them. You think we could get them to send us some?
Yeah, I bet you could.
You know what I mean? Let's message them and be like, hey, look, we're really interested. This is the show we do. Would you send us some down here so we can fry it and try it?
I'll bet you everything I have, it does not taste like bacon.
I'm going to get in touch with
them. I mean, it might taste similar, but not the same.
If any of you out there are listening right now that are Oregon State students.
Beavers. Go Beavers, right?
Or know some people there that think they can get a hold of this guy or whatnot, hit me up because I want to try this bacon seaweed. Bacon seaweed wrap.
Yeah, there we go.
I'm going to use it in my sushi.
Yeah, there you go. Yeah, that'd be excellent. Let's move on. We talk about humanoids all the time, you know, with our buddy Albert Rosales and David Weatherly. And I saw David, he's got a blog called Two Crows Paranormal. And he recently posted two separate silver-suited humanoid sightings from years ago. And they're kind of interesting. Check this first one out. This first one occurred near Coimbra, Coco, Brazil. And the witness was a naval officer. And this happened on the night of October 10th, 1957. Spanish naval officer and mineralogist Miguel Navarrete and his chauffeur were returning from a fishing trip when they spotted a bright light that had begun a steep climb into the sky. After finishing the climb, the men realized that this object was huge and a few hundred meters in diameter. Its light was so intense that it clearly illuminated the area around the witnesses, even while at a great height. The driver, as anyone would expect, panicked and tried to drive the truck away from the area. However, like so many other times, the truck's engine stalled at the same time. While that was happening, a huge object began to approach them, flying over the vehicle, hovering at about 40 yards away. The craft was about 140 meters, they think, in diameter and about 40 meters tall, oval in shape, with the top higher than the bottom, like two superimposed plates separated by a band of approximately 20 meters deep. When it was about 6 meters in height, the light went out and it stopped in midair. It then landed. Once it landed, a large door opened and the witness saw seven human-like figures with blonde hair wearing shiny, silvery outfits. The aliens exited the object briefly and stared silently at the truck and, of course, the stunned witnesses. After returning to the craft, the object took off and stopped at about 500 feet in altitude. At this point, a smaller object came out of it and flew in a northern direction at a very high speed. The larger object then disappeared towards the southeast. Now, after the incident, Mr. Navarrete was interviewed by the local magistrate, Dr. Gabriel Barboza, and his deputy, Paulo Roberto de Cavajillo. After the interview, the judge sent the letter to the Secretary of the Interior and the Head Justice of the state about reporting this incident. Now, he also posted, David Weatherly, another interesting case about silver suit wearing humanoids back on, and this happened on November 4th, 1973. And this time, it took place near Goffstown, New Hampshire. The account goes like this. One night while sleeping, a man named Rex Snow and his wife were laying in bed when he heard a brushing sound against the outside of their house. So, he got up to investigate what was making the sound when he got the shock of his life. Rex observed two self-luminous, silver-suited beings about 4.5 to 5 feet tall, 60 feet away in the backyard. They had oversized, pointed ears, dark, egg-shaped eye holes, and large noses, all encased in a silver coverall. They had on silver boots with upturned toes. One humanoid held a flashlight-like object, while the other picked things up off the ground and put them in a silver bag. Their movements were slow, but deliberate. The family dog, Miko, trained as a guard dog, was ordered to attack them, but halted when only 30 feet away. It turned around, walked back, and laid down whining on the kitchen floor. Now, the author of this story wants to mention that Rex, until this moment, didn't remember it, but later he remembered that about 5 years earlier than that, he thought he saw what looked like a UFO in the sky. So there's two accounts separated by two continents and over 20 years where these beings are seen in this egg-shaped, oval-shaped craft, both wearing silver clothing. And we've talked about that before, whether it's a rod or a flashlight, whatever this device is, they seem to be able to use to stun people or turn them away, or even dogs, or to hypnotize them, whatever they're doing with it. And all this. And we've also heard about the blonde hair before. Remember, what was it? Friendship Island? Blonde hair. These Nordics. You remember the Nordics? There'll be a lot of Nordic sightings in between the 50s and the 70s. You don't really hear about that many anymore, though. That is odd. Anyways, I thought you would like those stories.
Our CGI got better.
Yeah, maybe. Those stories are interesting. Albert Rosales, of course, is the man when it comes to humanoids.
Yes.
I think he's got like 12 books out now, and you can go over there on Amazon and get those things. Those are awesome.
No, they're great. It's if you're into it, you just like it's case
17,000 different cases.
Yeah, it's awesome.
Yeah, so
well, I got you a sighting. Since we're going to start kicking out sightings, I got you a sighting here from Phantoms and Monsters that you're going to enjoy, my friend.
Okay.
Stuff that we like to see in the woods. Now, this comes from up near Johnson City, Tennessee. The witness and his cousin were out hunting, folks. And they were sitting on the side of a wall of a rather large hollow, which consisted of very thick underbrush and lots of evergreen. Say a larger valley then led first to a clearing, and then it was to an alleged old Native American graveyard. Says all of a sudden they heard the brush in the hollow begin rattling below them, and they could tell that whatever was making these sounds was rather large. Now it says the main witness was armed with a Ruger 10/22 rifle. Now, folks, for those of you that don't know what a 10/22 is, it usually means it's a 10-shot, 22 caliber rifle, .22. It's not very large. Ruger's the brand of it. Said he had approximately 150 rounds of ammo for it with him.
I used to use one. I think I had a Marlin M60, very similar. Yep.
And my daughter's got a 10/22, the whole thing. But he said now, under his night vision scope, that he could see what appeared to be a man. But he says, upon further inspection, he realized that this man was a creature about 7 to 8 feet tall and what he approximately guessed to be 450 pounds. Says it was covered with thick black fur and was slimmer than the popular Bigfoot image. He says, almost skinny and it with a neck. He says, it had a neck now. He said, also protruding from either side of its head were long tapered horns that were also black in color. He said on the top of the head also protruded a horn pointing straight up, and all the horns were approximately 5 to 6 inches in length and were the same dark color as the creature. Now, this witness goes on to say that he was terrified and emptied a 25-round clip into this creature and then retreated to the nearby cabin about 65 feet away. Now, the next morning, they could not find anything except a lot of spent shell casings and bullet holes on a walnut tree. Yeah. Now, he said he thought that he had struck this creature several times. Now, nearby animal traps had been sprung and all the bait extracted. Goes on to say that on a nearby ridge, the witness located a series of tunnels made up of brush and various sizes of tree limbs, vines, and leaves, that they thought it could have been what they called the lair of the beast. But they were afraid, so they left. They tore out of there.
Wow.
Now, look, I don't know what to say about firing at this thing multiple times, you know, emptying a clip. I'm like, I understand if you had a large caliber rifle.
That's
maybe,
exactly what, that was my
but
point.
A 22?
Yeah, I'm like, I wouldn't fire a 22 at almost anything unless it was like a turtle.
Well, you're talking about shooting a 22, like maybe like a bear. I mean, that's what you don't know what this thing is.
Yeah.
Look, first of all, don't shoot at anything. Just sit there and be quiet, watch it. You don't need to interact.
Especially shouldn't
it.
Shoot at something if you don't know what it is.
Exactly. But why would you
say accidentally shoot people?
But I wouldn't shoot it, period. You're just witnessing something strange. Don't unload on it.
I'd probably turn the gun on myself.
But what could... Okay. Here we go again,
here
folks.
Here we go.
Here's our favorite part of the show. Let's try to break down what they saw. Here we go. Guess what they saw. What could it have been? I understand. Look, I don't know. Night vision. Here's parts of the story I don't get. You're out in the dark with a 22 caliber rifle. The way they describe something with the traps, maybe they were trapping so they had the night vision so they could see, not roam around the woods with flashlights, whichever, whatever. I don't care. It's on them. How good of night vision equipment do they have? I have no idea. Is it good? Is it not so good? Is it the $300 stuff or the $3,000 stuff? Who knows? And what could it have possibly been? Because I've looked through those cheap, worthless night vision monoculars, the singles, and they're not that great. Like, you could use one real close walking so you wouldn't fall down, but if you're trying to look at a distance, it's not that great. So I could see how maybe you thought you saw something. Maybe there was an animal moving. Maybe it wasn't as big. Maybe it was a white tail. Maybe it, you know, who knows? Maybe you saw horns, but it really wasn't as big as what you thought it was. Or there's a big horned, like, minotaurish monster walking around out there. You know what I mean? Like, I don't know. Well, what could you mistaken what they described for in the wild?
You know, it reminds me of that interview we did with Nathan Couch about the goat man. That was a very interesting interview. If you haven't heard that, go back to our back catalog. You can check that out. Where were these people when we were talking to Nathan say that they see this minotaur-like thing walking around when they're hunting? I remember one story in particular where a guy was bow hunting. and he saw this half man, half goat.
Yeah.
Just kind of cursing to itself in the woods. I don't know, terrifying.
I don't want to see anything like
that. No, sir.
Now, folks, y'all all know that I have a soft spot for my favorite thing, of course, is the fae, the little people in the woods. Well, given that it's getting close to the holiday season, and we know the elves are hard at work somewhere making toys for all you good boys and girls, I'm going to do some sightings and some tales that people have had encounters with gnomes. Little garden gnome style, a little pointed hat, creepy little gnome characters. So we're going to discuss that when we get back from this break right quick, folks. You're listening to Expanded Perspectives.
Brand new luxury apartments. If you're in the market, listen. Brand new luxury apartments. Champion has a new property, River Park of Dublin, which is a mile south of Dublin. Location is everything. Spacious 1, 2, and 3 bedroom homes, designer finishes, resort style amenities, exceptional customer service. That's Champion. Champion's brand new luxury apartments, River Park of Dublin. Now do something about it. Visit livewithchampion.com. Livewithchampion.com.
One of the largest Star Wars fan collections in the world is coming to Kosai. Unofficial Galaxies opens on May 10th, and this is a one-of-a-kind exhibition with iconic characters, props, legendary ships, costumes, and behind-the-scenes secrets. It's going to be a must-see whether you're a hardcore Star Wars fan or just curious about one of the most famous sci-fi franchises of all time. Unofficial Galaxies is coming to Kosai starting on May 10th. So get your tickets now at kosai.org.
And let's get down to gnome business. Gnome business is show business. So look, everybody knows, like I said before, I love this kind of stuff. I love the idea of little people in the woods. Love the tales of Dwendies, of the fae, of the gnome, of the elf. I love this idea, and for some reason, it feels real to me. Out of all of it, and I keep saying it, and I don't know why. Maybe because I'm passionate about it, because maybe it is, you know, it's my favorite thing. So I guess I could see how some people are stuck in their ways when it comes to thinking about Sasquatch or ghosts or UFOs. Some people have, you know, they lean towards more things, and then that's how they're like, well, all these stories must be real. I'm not saying that. I'm just saying this is my favorite group of stories,
right?
Yeah. About the little people. Now, I'm going to bring you one here. It says, my mother had this happen to her when she was 6 years old. She's now in her 60s. And she claims that she saw a shimmering fairy that was silver outside of her windowsill when she would go to bed at night. Now, my mother told her mother, who didn't believe her, and says, my mom became more scared of this fairy as nights went on. She told me that she could hear these tinkling noises and that she once saw a small silver spoon on the outside of her bedroom windowsill. Now, she had assumed this fairy or this fae was leaving some sort of gift. Like, you know, we're talking about fae folk, gnomes and whatnot.
Right.
Now, she said that even though that she believes that there was nothing to really be scared of, it terrified her. And then she says one night, it just stopped showing up, stopped coming, everything, no more. So it's like once she started really getting a fear for it,
yeah,
this thing could sense it and quit showing up.
Well, that's good for her.
How wild is that, though? Like, so that, yet again, what could you have mistaken something silvery? And then you found the little spoon. Now, it doesn't go into any further like this. First of all, who would just leave a spoon on a windowsill on a kid that was seeing all this stuff?
Yeah, a tiny one too.
Yeah, and I wish the mom still had the spoon. I wish there was more to the story about that. So the more I get to look, I'm like, man, that's pretty wild. I got to kicking around. I found a story here that comes from the Northwest Territories. This is the one that's sent in. And you know, like we've covered a lot of the Bigfoot stories and things up in there with the elders and the folk that live up in this area. This guy's talking about how he had had this interaction, you know, and that his uncle had told him these stories. And he says that his uncle had always told him there were places in the woods to avoid. There's areas that you don't go to because these fae in this area, they don't have villages per se. He said, but they do have dwellings in this area, and this is their part of the woods. Now, he said that, you know, that his uncle, he would always harass him when he was younger. He's like, take me and show me. I want to see him. I want to see him. And he said, no, I know they're there. That's good enough. I know where they're at, and I don't need, you know, one of those deals. You don't want to go showing somebody, and then that somebody go prodding around. So he's just like, no, we're not going.
Yeah.
He said, so one time his uncle and he were hunting some caribou up there, and he told him, he goes, look, you need to keep an eye out while we're around here, man, because we're really close to where these things are. We're kind of encroaching closer than I want to be on this part of the woods. And then the boy's like, all right. He said, so the uncle, you know, got his binoculars out and said he was scanning around looking and stuff like this. And he said, he just stopped for 1 second. And he started glassing real hard in one area. He said, the boy said he's sitting there watching his uncle. And of course, this is not unusual. When I say glassing, folks, for those that aren't, you know what we're talking about, the slang for that, usually you have your binoculars or a spotting scope. And lots of times, if you're lucky, you'll get a stick to hold your binoculars where you can kind of hold them a little more steady. But you spend a lot of time behind them, like glasses, and you're glassing, and you're looking for animals that you're going to try to stalk. You're going to try to get within distance of. So his uncle was doing this, was glassing.
For caribou.
For caribou. And he said he came to a point and he stopped, and he wasn't moving and scanning the horizon anymore. He was just focused on one area, which isn't unusual. You may have seen an animal that you're wanting to put together an idea of how you're going to go to get there to him. Said after a while, his uncle kind of elbowed him and he handed him the binoculars and he pointed over to the east. And the boy said, well, when I was a young man, he said, you know, I pull the binoculars up and I start looking. He said, it's there that I see the body of a caribou. The body. And he said, it was moving up a hill. He goes, now I could tell it was dead. He said, but the strange thing was it looked like it was being carried. He goes, the only problem was is I couldn't see what was carrying it. So it's like it's on its side. And it's going up the hill, like it's being dragged up the hill, but you can't see anything dragging it. Whatever's moving it is underneath it. Now, he said he would watch it. And he said about every 100 feet or so that it would stop, and it would sit there for a little bit, and then it would start going back up the hill again. And he said, we watched it for quite a while, handing those binoculars back and forth. So it's almost like ants underneath this caribou. And he said it was going back in that area that the uncle said, keep an eye out. We don't want to go get back in there. He said, after a little bit, he said, now we watched it for a while. And he goes, after a little while, my uncle's like, we got to get the heck out of here. And they got up and, you know, shimmied on out. Well, another story along the same thing.
That's crazy.
Yeah, it's exactly.
They're not friendly, according to his uncle. You know, it doesn't sound like that. You're supposed to interfere at all. That's, man, I can only imagine myself sitting in the woods hunting and seeing that. It blows me away.
Well, and say you were just like a photographer, just an outdoors photographer, which is one of those things, too, that I'm always like, how come they haven't seen something like this? Because a lot of the outdoor photographers spend a lot of time out there doing wildlife photography. You know, and like I would like to talk to some that maybe have had some encounters or have seen something, and maybe they've got some photos and they don't share them. You know, of course, I may be wishful thinking. Maybe they don't share them because they've never seen anything. Maybe all these stories are BS. You know, I don't know. But I would think that all the time that they spend in the woods, maybe they saw something. A follow-up to this story is another fellow writes in, too, that he lived in northern British Columbia. He said the elders in that area tell about the same story. And he tells a story about these two young boys that went out hunting and that they saw a moose. Now, mind you, a moose. And it was on its back, dead. But that it was crossing a lake, like I guess maybe the shallow part of a lake, the way it's going, coming down through there. Or maybe there's a little, I don't know, rocks across there, whatever they're talking about. Said the boys are trying to see what's going on. So they get up there and it's little people carrying it, like little people carrying this thing. Said they decided to try to take this moose, see if they could take it away from these people. And the story goes that these children were captured and taken to the mountain in that area where these little people of the forest live. Now, he said that the boys were missing for about 5 years. So I guess they assumed they were dead. Now, who knows? And of course, now this is all a folklore story. We don't have any, you know, there's nothing to say that this was a story that happened and been told over and over. But the story goes that when they actually returned to their village, that they had aged by over 20 years.
Really?
Yeah.
That. I mean, how do you explain that?
It's insane, right? Now, get this. It said there's also stories in that same area that they also talk about where they, and then we've kind of heard some stuff about this, of the little people coming and helping men out in the wilderness or families out in the, build cabins. Like when you're trying to survive the winter, like you're out there and you're struggling, right? Mm-hmm. Now, you know, we always talk about the fact of the cobbler. You know, like the cobbler, you know, he's trying to make shoes and the elves come in and do his work for the evening. We also hear about the, you know, the little people, the elves, the fae, if you leave them something, they'll do something in return. But once you start that process, you have to constantly barter with them every night, or, you know, they'll do bad things and take you and take family and do all this stuff. But so there's also tales in northern British Columbia about these little men of the woods show up whenever the families are struggling. They're trying to get their cabin built before the winter, and they help them build the whole thing. So it all, you know, I'm like, it also makes me wonder this. There's the romantic side of me again. Is if you were up there with your family, and you're up there for a reason. You know, you're done with society. You're done with, you're living off the grid now.
Right.
And you have these encounters with these little people. Or and then maybe even later on you see a Bigfoot or whatnot. But that's neither here nor there. You have these encounters with little people. Why would you want to return to the spotlight to tell everybody what you just had an encounter with if you've already moved up there for a reason to get away from the spotlight?
Yeah.
So I think that there's probably some very well detailed and documented stories that have happened to people up there, but they're not willing to talk about it. I mean, you and I have discussed it, and there's several stuff that we don't haven't even talked about on the show of sightings and encounters that people have had that ask us not to talk about it on the show, but have given us stuff that have to do with Bigfoot. And it also makes me think of that is there's people that have these things happen, but they don't want anybody to know. So yeah. So those stories like that, that come from the elders about them helping them build cabins, it makes me wonder how true and how real that really is. But it doesn't just stop there. You would think, okay, that's the mountainous area, right? Okay. It's a beautiful area. It's mountainous. That's where they're going to be. There was one that a man wrote in talking about, he was living in Australia. And he still does, lives there in Australia. And he had his daughter, and they were on some play equipment at a park. And he said that this park they're at, it's surrounded by woods. He said he wasn't thinking of anything. He's standing there, he's watching his daughter play. It's a wonderful day there in Australia. It's great. And he said out of the corner of his right eye, he sees some movement in his peripheral. And it, like, it moves behind a tree. You know, and we've all seen a bird or a cat run by or something out of the corner of your eye. And you're like, what? So that's what he is. He's like, what was that? I said, so he kept watching. He's like, maybe, and this is what he writes, you know, maybe it was just a wallaby. Maybe it's something, nothing. He's just looking over there. He said, huh. And he said, he looks back at his daughter. Didn't see anything, you know, that darted behind the tree. He left it alone. He looked back at his daughter. He's watching it. He said, he kind of turns and glances back again to where he saw that movement was. He said, just nothing. Don't really know what made me look over there. I don't know if it was maybe me feeling that something was looking at me. Maybe it just something. But he goes, no reason. I just casually glanced back over there. He said, the only way I can describe what was beside this tree, right at this tree trunk, was a 30-centimeter tall, tiny person. Right there, looked like the typical gnome that everybody knows what it's like. He said, and I mean like the garden gnome, the red hat, the big cherub cheeks, dark colored lips. He said, looking right at me.
I've heard several people write me emails and stuff telling me that they're gnome that they saw, that you're going to think I'm crazy.
Yeah.
It looked just like the garden gnome.
Yeah. And that's what this guy states. He goes, the only difference about this garden gnome was that it looked very evil. He said it was glaring with some really ill intent, just staring him down.
Maybe that's why the boy's uncle was like, we don't need to be over there.
Yeah.
Don't mess with them.
Well, and we've heard this numerous times too about them. They're not so... Maybe there's different, I don't know if there could be different species of gnome, you know, maybe there's that we don't know about. We just know about a few, but these, because it seems like there are cases to where you get into the evil ones or then you get into the nice ones, or maybe they're both one and the same. It just depends. If you're willing to work with them, they're going to be nice, but you're going to have to work for them. Now, the fella goes on to say that he saw this gnome for roughly 10 seconds. So right now, folks, if you're driving, don't do this. But if you're sitting at your desk, if you're just working, you're doing your job, you're walking around, whatever you're doing, if you're handling heavy equipment, machinery, don't, of course, do this. Pull it over to the side of the road. I want you to count to yourself, 1-1,000, 2-1,000. I want you to look at somebody walking or somebody in your office, stare at them, and I want you to count to 10 to yourself. And I want you to try to take in all the detail as you're looking at this, because I want you to see how long 10 seconds really is. I want you to focus on their shirt. on their facial features, if they're wearing a ball cap, what the ball cap says. I want you to focus on that, on anything, for 10 seconds. You're going to see how much detail you're going to really remember. Now, understandably, this was something that caught him off guard. Maybe he was a little flustered. I don't know. But what I'm getting at is you're not going to misidentify a wallaby. You're not going to misidentify a large bird, a cat, a plastic bag, an old jacket thrown over in the brush. You're not going to misidentify that when you stare at something for 10 seconds. Now, he says that he quickly looked back at his daughter when he saw all this after staring at this gnome, looked back, and it wasn't there any longer. Gone. So it's like the minute it broke his gaze, boy, that gnome shagged on out of there. Now, he said he was rattled enough that he grabbed his daughter and took off. Like, that's it. We're out of here.
Wow.
Now, there's another one here that comes, of course, from down around Argentina and Bolivia, and it's the Duende. And we always talk about these Duendes. There's a story that this guy says that a friend of him told her, or told him, that she had had an encounter with a Duende when she was about 4 years old. He said it looked to her, what she remembers now, as just like a garden gnome. But she said the greatest thing about it was they was what they had, of course, been told in this little village area, that there was a eucalyptus tree there that was roughly 300 years old, is what the people around there said. And she says that that's where this Duende lived. Now, she said that they would play for hours, and then at night, now she's talking about would play for hours, I guess, with this garden gnome, with this thing, and then at night she would get like a fever and a rash. And that when she told her parents about this garden, this Duende, living in this eucalyptus tree, that the parents went and told the city, and then the city went and got, I guess, some people, like a bulldozer and all kinds of, and they bulldozed that whole area out of there. The brush, the big eucalyptus tree, everywhere that they were sighting all that. Maybe it was the dad, maybe, who knows? I mean, they don't go into the detail of that, but they pretty much destroyed where this little girl was hanging out with this Duende, and nobody ever saw it again. Gone.
Wow.
Now, you know, we've talked about with Icelandic cultures of them building roads around them, things like that. So it's like, that sure is odd. But back in Merlo, the municipality of Merlo, which is in Argentina, back in 2007, that municipality trimmed some trees because it had some overhanging branches. We've all seen it. We've all had it happen. We've all done it at our houses or around there. Because these branches were hanging down over the motorway there, causing some problems for the drivers and people traveling there. Well, after they did this work, some people in the area started reporting that they saw little men coming out of this tree in a single file line.
I've heard that before too, man, yeah. Where they're always walking in like
little working lines,
like a marching order.
Whistling. Yeah. Now, of course, what we just covered, they seem to tend to dwell on these trees, you know, in these areas. So all this landscape is, you know, in Argentina, of course, beautiful. If you look at all the pictures of it, it's a beautiful place. So days after this, you know, after this municipality there does all this, and the local residents said, you know, they trimmed this old tree. Turns out this old tree, folks, is a eucalyptus tree, and it was right next door to the library there in Piedra Blanca. And it's on a tight curve on that road, and those branches were hanging over, like I said, and they were getting into the utility wires and up against the telephone poles, things like that, and on windy days, of course, whipping right out onto the cars. So like we talked about, they trimmed it. They took down there, took all this, they moved the traffic to the side, did all this stuff, boom, did all this trimming. Well, apparently some people there at the library said that's when they started noticing there were some little people. Now, they didn't describe a lot, but one woman said this. She came forward, and she said that their clothing had a brownish hue to it. So it makes me think of the brownies. We start getting into the brown skin, yeah. The brown clothes. Now, the employee there at the library, who actually fielded a lot of the calls outside from the residents around, said, hey, look, this is what we're seeing. They said, now, she said that she didn't notice anything unusual. She didn't see really anything at all. And she was the one taking all the phone calls. She's like, I didn't see anything. But the woman there that reported, you know, that, hey, we saw, or we had a witness tell us about this brownish hue. She said that there's been what they refer to them as imp sightings. Yeah. IMP, imp sightings in that area of town and in their district and all that. For years, and even some of the streets around there have been known for this stuff. And they say, this is what they believe, it's because they have an overabundant amount of native plants. Like, so they don't really go out of their way to, you know, because our city's bad about it. A lot of cities are bad about it. They take it all down, and then they don't put native plants back up.
Right, yeah, you're right.
You know, they just bulldoze everything down, and they put up rose bushes. You're like, rose bushes have never grown here. You just planted them because you wanted them, and that's the reason it looks fake. It doesn't look right.
Right.
Whereas, of course, around our courthouse and all that stuff is all native grasses. Everything around our square is all native grasses. They went back and redid that. We did that years ago. But up until then, it used to not be. You know, it was, you know, just shrubbery and things like normal stuff. Well, she says that she believes that it's because of that, and that many of these people in those in that native grasses have said that they have seen these little people living in that area. She goes on to say that there was, you know, of course, when the trimming operation was over, and all this stuff had been wiped out, that it was devastating for these little people. And that's the reason that she thinks that you're going to see a rise in sightings spread out more. That her belief is it's more kind of like an ant mound or a beehive, and that this is where they feel safe.
Yeah, that
and
makes
you start
sense.
Talking about a eucalyptus tree. Maybe they, I didn't know they grew that old. I have no idea. What am I, a botanist? I don't have any idea about this. So you're talking about all this, maybe they grow for it. So maybe that is a tie, that the older that tree is and the older like an earthen spirit would be, that these little people are tied to it in a way. You know, this is where they have to stay. And when you destroy that, well, they disperse, like we talked about, like an ant mound that you destroy in your yard. Then the other ants go elsewhere, or bees or bird nests or something. So they have to go. But it is odd that a lot of people saw it. But she even goes on to say that out of a lot of people that witnessed it, they wouldn't really talk about it. They just said, hey, look, we saw it, and this is what we saw, and that's all we're going to say. So you can tell that folklore still rings deep into them. You know
what
I'm saying?
That's what I love about these stories, man.
Yeah.
I want this to be so real.
Yes.
I believe it is.
Well, here's a story that's very interesting. It took place in Hudson Valley there in New York State a while back in an old farmhouse where these people had moved to. And it happened to a boy named Dave Barcelo when he was 10. And he said that during a storm at one time, right now, he said he was on bed on the first floor, and his sister and his parents, of course, asleep upstairs. That's when he noticed that there was something outside his window at the time that this is happening. Now, he said that the wind, of course, was very bad that night, right? And he said, but during the wind, he said there was another sound. And he said this sound was so odd that it gave him goosebumps. He said it was a howling. He said it was not like a dog, not like anything. He goes, it was so much that my body instantly reacted to it at the time. You hear that sound and instantly, he said, I was covered in goosebumps. He said it was like something, he said, that it couldn't come from any human lips, is what he says. That no animal I knew of could wail like that. That's what he's talking about. So you've got to think of something as you're like, what is over the winds of a storm? You hear this wailing. So instantly, my mind goes to, well, is it, you know, cutting across, you know, like you blow across a Coke bottle? Is there something making a sound out there? It's not. He said later on, he found out that what they ended up calling it this, the howler. Yeah. So he got him and he went down the hall to his grandmother's room and he got in bed next to her and he asked his grandma, he goes, what is that? And his grandmother said, don't worry about it, honey. It's just the wind. Like any grandma would do, she's going to comfort her grandson. It's just the wind. Dave said, but I knew it wasn't the wind. And I knew that she knew it wasn't the wind. Now, you got to imagine, 10-year-old, you're not fooling a 6-year-old. This boy's 10, okay? He says that the wailing came around the house and got closer to him on that side. He said, at this point, he says, Grandma reached and put her arms around me and pulled me tight. He said the howling at this point was right outside of her window and was just a few feet from us. He said, I was freaking. So, he's buried his face in his grandma. He said, finally, when the storm died down, the sound started dying down, and he said, then I went to sleep. He said, but I woke up, and they said it was sunlight beaming through the window, of course, you know, hitting his face, wakes him up. We've all been there. And he said, but his grandma's gone. So he gets up. He starts walking around. He's looking for where did grandma go? You know, I want to ask her some more about that. And he found her outside, and she's on the front porch of the house,
right
outside where their window is and all that, and she's got a mop and a bucket. and he could see her cleaning out there. She's mopping the front porch. He couldn't really tell what it was, and he gets a little closer, and he sees that there are muddy footprints all over the front porch floor. Yeah.
Wow.
Walk around during the storm. He goes, but not normal footprints. He said they were tiny little footprints like those of a toddler. He goes, instantly, I got goosebumps all over again. He said, look at Grandma. I said, what made those footprints? She never looked up at him. She never answered him. She just kept cleaning, paid no attention. He said, at that point, he said, I never again asked my grandmother about the howler. He said, I really think the main reason was, is I was afraid to know what really was outside of the house that night.
Wow.
So you have to attribute that to one of those evil little gnomes, little tiny footprint, evil little gnomes.
Yeah, I think you're right.
Well, there's another wild little thing here that a fellow named Dan moved to Liberty, Missouri back in the 40s, and they moved into an old two-bedroom farmhouse. And outside of this old farmhouse, there was an old barn. Now, Dan said, and of course, he was a little boy, and he said that he saw something basically that has haunted his mind his entire life. He says that he'll call him a troll. A troll is what it reminds him of. He said, I was about 4 years old when this happened. So he remembers this. So apparently it was traumatic. And if, you know, some people say you don't remember things from four. I don't remember things from 4 years old, but I'd have never had anything like this happen to me. But he was in the same room as he's got two little brothers at the time. So you got to throw all three of them there in there asleep. He said he opened his eyes, and that's when he realized that in that room with his brothers that they weren't alone. He said, now get a load of this, Philly. You'll like this. In the room, he said this. It was an old man with a long beard, large nose, about 3 feet tall, standing at the foot of my bed. Yeah.
Yeah. Wow.
Now, he said this is what caught his mind, and he's always held on to this, that this little old man, this little old fella standing there, had a pipe in his hand, was wearing some German Lederhosen, and there was smoke rolling out of the bowl of his pipe. He said, now this troll, that he calls it, just stood there staring at him. And he said he turned a little crooked smile through his beard, winked at him, like, I know you see me, kid, winks at him, turned around and walked towards the closet, and then disappeared inside the closet.
Wow.
Yeah.
I love stories like this.
Now get a load of this, though. He said he doesn't think, he doesn't remember that he ever saw the little fella again. But he does say this, that later on in life, that his mother told him this. He says, as a child, my mother said I had an imaginary friend, and I called it by its name. Now, my mother said the name sounded like a science fiction movie name, but that I was the only one that could see it. Yeah. But he does go on to say that he remembers looking out his bedroom window at night and seeing people near the old barn in his backyard, near that old barn.
Yeah.
And they were all little people.
Wow.
So it goes back into what you and I've always discussed with the kids. What if they're the ones that can see it? They're the ones that are dialed in where they can see all this stuff. We can't see that kind of stuff at all, but they do. Now, this comes from a fellow named David. He's 54, but he grew up there in Orange, New Jersey. And he's talking about a friend of his named Jerry said that he saw in the early 60s a troll is what they called it also. And he said he remembers his buddy Jerry talking about this troll. And the way he described it was looked like a leprechaun or an elf,
right,
you know, like we're talking about. But it had a long beard, and it was on his steps. And said, now, of course, he's talking about this. He said that Dave goes and meets with his buddy back in 2009. They're talking about it because his buddy had moved to the Philippines.
Right.
So they go down there and they're visiting. He said that he asked him, he said, you know, when he was a kid, he was in his backyard, and he was startled by a gnome-like man with a long beard standing by his back porch. He said he had funny clothes and a pointed hat, and that this thing was about 2 to 3 feet tall, and it just stood at the steps there staring at him. But he said that this wasn't the last time that it made an appearance there at Jerry's house. This is David talking about this, that Jerry had told him. Said that wasn't the only time. He said, but then when he was in his 20s, Jerry took his 5-year-old nephew, had him with him, took a nap in the upstairs bedroom, said the boy wakes up, starts screaming, starts crying, runs downstairs, and said that he was woken up by this, a little small man with a long white beard standing at the foot of the bed looking at him. Yeah.
Wow.
So much like the same little guy. Now, they don't bring up the pipe, which really kind of bums me out because I was hoping that they would. So we don't know if those are mischievous. So we start off with some mischievous, don't go there. These are evil. Don't go in these areas. Right?
Yeah.
We get into these others that they're just there winking and smiling at people.
Yeah.
So we don't really know. We're going to wrap it with this one. Says this, of course, anonymous witness that writes this in says this, that my mother and my grandmother swear that this story I'm about to tell you is true. As strange as it sounds, and as interesting as it is, it's true. That it took place in the summer of 1969. Says my mother at the time was 19 years old. Says she doesn't drink, you know, no drugs, no nothing. This is what happened to her. In the summer of 69, and of course, you know, you've got to understand the reason that they make the point of no drinking, no drugs, nothing like that, is because we're in the summer of 69. So,
right.
Says my mom is there sleeping in her room, which is right off of the kitchen, and that she had stayed at his grandmother's for quite some time while his father, so this person reporting this, his father was in Vietnam. So the mom would go and stay with her mom, okay?
Uh-huh.
And that she had her window open that night, and she heard something outside. So the mom sets up to listen. So she was about to get up and look when she saw a little man crawl through the open window. Just hop up, throw his little leg over, slide down. Said the mom didn't panic, didn't anything. Just sat there. Didn't even scare. She was like, what am I seeing? You know, almost like it's, she can't even believe it. She says this little fellow walks up to the very foot of her bed and climbs up on it and sits down with his legs hanging off the side of the bed like a child, just sitting there. The mom said that she didn't do anything, that she just sat there and stared at him. Now, according to her description, looks exactly like a garden gnome that we've been discussing. And said that he sat there, looked like he was trying to get comfortable, like he's wiggling around, he's moving around, he's trying to get his little nest built, right? Get situated. Said he had a little bag that he's carrying, a little satchel, and he reaches in this little bag and he pulls out his pipe. There's that pipe again. Looks like he packs around a little bit. He lights it, takes a few puffs off of his pipe, and then he turns and looks right at his mother. Now she goes on to say that the little fella said, hey, look, I've got some bad news about your husband. Don't worry, he's okay. This little gnome fella goes on to say that his father, that her husband, was in some trouble and that she'll hear more about it in the morning. But he's all right. Don't fret. Said he tapped his pipe in his hand, slid down off the bed, strolled nonchalantly across the floor, and climbed back up and out the window. Goes on to say that that's when it finally sank in my mom's head of what just happened. And she decided to call out for the grandmother. And the grandmother came in, turned on the light, says, hey, honey, what's wrong? The mom explained. My grandmother, not paying attention to my mother, noticed smoke still lingering in the room and asked, have you been smoking? My mom told her the story again, but the grandmother didn't believe it. The very next morning, they get a phone call there from the army that said that her husband, this person's father, was injured in an attack and would be sent home in about 10 days. Says it is at that point, the grandmother then believed her.
Wow.
So he goes on to say that I asked my mom why she said that she thought it was a ghost. And she said this, it was because that she could see through him. He was ethereal. She says, I thought ghosts would float or anything like this. But she goes, I didn't know like a ghostly gnome would crawl through an open window, but he was ethereal. So when he came to me, I could still see through him.
Wow.
So, okay. Then we go back into, what are you mistaking that for?
I have no answer.
My other thing to this story is this. I love the idea of this, but why would the little guy come and tell her the if you don't know to be upset and worried,
right?
Then what's the benefit of knowing not to be upset or worried? If they're going to call and explain it to you the next day, why would he show up to tell her?
I have no idea.
You know what I mean? I would understand if she said, look, your husband's been in an accident and that's all we can tell you. And then he showed up and said, hey, look, he's going to be fine. He's just slightly injured, but they're going to send him home. And then the next day you found out, hey, they're sending him home. But the very next day she found out he was under attack, he was injured, and he would be home. So what was this whole thing even there for? Yeah. You know, that's the only thing. I'm not questioning the story. I'm questioning the motive of the little faithful.
Yeah, what's he doing?
So we start off with a young lady back in the 50s and 60s that sees a glowing fae on her windowsill. Seems to be interacting. The minute that fae senses that she's scared, it vanishes.
That's right.
Yep. Never comes back. Then we roll into the stories of those guys seeing them from the Northwest Territories, seeing them up in the mountains, carrying away dead animals. So that goes back into, well, then they're not ethereal if they have to eat dead animals.
Right.
What are you carrying them around for? You got to make clothes. So it's almost like they're really there. Now, it never does say what killed the caribou or the moose. If one of those little fellas, if there's like 30 or 40 of them, little bows and arrows attacked it, you know, you don't ever hear about anything like that. What is odd is the way the story seems to progress whenever they talk about the young boys that go missing and they come back 20 years older. That almost seems like the Fae realm in reverse. Because, you know, usually they come back and they haven't aged a day.
Yeah.
You know, like, I felt like, and you've been gone 5 years, but you haven't aged a day. So that's strange to me. It's like, okay, so they took them someplace that they weren't supposed to go. It aged them tremendously. But so whatever's carrying these animals off need to eat an animal, obviously.
Yeah.
Then you get into the one in Australia where we talk about the guy feels like it was an evil presence, like it was not happy that he was there. Well, then you get into the fact now that this girl plays, you go from the evil presence to then the little girl sees it. So this one in Australia is showing up where there's another little girl playing. Then you go down to Argentina. There's a little girl playing. The little girl befriends the Duende place, but it makes her sick. She gets a fever. She gets a rash. Maybe she was allergic to eucalyptus. I don't know. But people, apparently it hit them enough that they wanted to destroy the plant. So then the same thing in Argentina, still in Merlot, eucalyptus plant, where people are seeing these little creatures moving in and out till they all move out after they trim the branches. Just trimming the branches, they left.
Yeah.
It wasn't enough room for them. Then, of course, we get into the whole fact of the howler. You start seeing muddy footprints. You know, so then it also, the muddy footprint thing makes me think, these noises, these Bigfoot howls, what if some of these are these things?
Yeah.
What if that is little people in the woods?
Man.
And that goes back into the missing people and missing 411, the whole deal. I think sometimes we get too set on the idea of Bigfoot. Bigfoot in the woods or Dogman in the woods.
Yeah, you're right.
What would be easier to go with? Because it does seem like the Fae seem to have the ability to woo people, pitch and woo. If you know what I'm saying, like they have them almost like they glam them like vampires.
Yeah.
It almost seems that way. So I would think that if you were going to get glammed or get caught up into something, the Fae would be the ones to drag you off, not so much Bigfoot. Now, I'm not saying Bigfoot couldn't force it on you, but it seems like you would willingly vanish with the Fae more than anything else.
Man, that is so cool.
So, yeah, that's what I got for you. Some crazy gnome stories that hit from all the corners because we're getting into gnome territory. We're getting in with the elves. So we got to make sure the elves are working hard to make our toys for Christmas.
That's right.
Well, folks, I hope you enjoyed that. Let's take a break. We'll come back. We'll wrap this puppy up. You're listening to Expanded Perspectives.
Luxury apartments. If you're in the market, listen, brand new luxury apartments. Champion has a new property, River Park of Dublin, which is a mile south of Dublin. Location is everything. Spacious 1, 2, and 3 bedroom homes, designer finishes, resort style amenities, exceptional customer service. That's Champion. Champion's brand new luxury apartments, River Park of Dublin. Now do something about it. Visit livewithchampion.com. Livewithchampion.com.
One of the largest Star Wars fan collections in the world is coming to Kosai. Unofficial Galaxies opens on May 10th, and this is a one-of-a-kind exhibition with iconic characters, props, legendary ships, costumes, and behind-the-scenes secrets. It's going to be a must-see whether you're a hardcore Star Wars fan or just curious about one of the most famous sci-fi franchises of all time. Unofficial Galaxies is coming to Kosai starting on May 10th. So get your tickets now at kosai.org.
And we're back with Expanded Perspectives. I love the stories of the gnomes or the Duendes or the Fae folk or whatever, the just little people. I love these stories. What was that? We got a book a couple years ago about little people. And these were like Native American stories about these little people. And it was, I'm going to have to get into that and maybe bring up some of that on the air sometime. But there were some fascinating stories from all over North America where all these people, and most of it was these people growing up, their grandparents or grandfathers or grandmothers living on a reservation or something, would tell them these stories about when they were little.
Yes.
And they would tell these stories about these little people. So, could all of these people be making up, you know what I mean, and the same story and the similarities between the stories? So what's the chance of somebody's grandfather in Arizona telling the exact same story as somebody else's grandfather up in, say, Montana or something? You know what I mean? And when I see stuff like that, the similarities, that's where I have to say there's something going on here, whether it's stories about the boogeyman or stories about the hat man or whatever. Are people seeing these things because they kind of see a picture of a gnome or they see a lawn gnome and then their mind is fabricating it? That's what's creating it? Or are the yard gnomes and stuff made because people have been seeing these bearded men with pipes and lederhosen and stuff on for years and years and years? I do not know.
Yeah.
But I find that stuff fascinating, and I'm glad you brought it up today.
It's my favorite, man. I can't help it. It's one of those deals. Every time we get any links, people send us stuff, it's... It was ancient history. Now, don't get me wrong, ancient history, but I don't even consider ancient history is like part of my life. So I don't even consider that anything. I've all my books are on it. But as far as when it comes to fringe topics, the fae is my favorite thing. It's hands down my favorite thing that we discuss, my favorite thing that we find. I love it. I can't get enough of it. And I'm with you. There has to be some ties somehow, somewhere. Just like we talk about all these stories and all these tales. I don't know if it's still going on, you know, like we talk about with Bigfoot. I don't know if it's still going on, but it does seem like it did go on.
Yeah.
You know, like there has basis in a truth somewhere.
Yeah, I agree with you. I saw this funny story I'd like to share with everybody before we get out of here. This is funny. This comes from Gizmodo by Rhett Jones. It's about a bank glitch that allows a man to spend over $1 million, Cam, and walk away scot-free.
Oh, can I get that glitch?
Right. It says, normally a glitch is a bad thing. Maybe it means your video game character gets stuck on a wall, or maybe a glitch that gets you wrongfully arrested. But for an Australian man named Luke Moore, a simple bank glitch meant that he was able to blow $1.3 million on cars, travel, strippers, and drugs over the course of 2 years. In March 2010, Moore was a broke law student and claiming government benefits. He applied at his bank, St. George, for a complete freedom account with overdraft protection. He quickly found out just how much freedom the account could afford him. After hitting $9,000 in overdrafts, Moore realized that the bank never stopped him from taking out cash. Moore would take out money from St. George and put it into other banks. He traveled the world, hitting Playboy hotspots like Thailand and the Australian Gold Coast. He bought an Aston Martin. He bought a Maserati. He bought a Hyundai. Not sure why he did that. He got a speedboat. He signed a Michael Jordan jersey. And he bought a signed Michael Jordan jersey and some art by Banksy. He took care of little leagues and things like that. He also took care of insurance and paying for the mortgage. Then it all ended when finally the bank noticed the error. 2 years and over $1 million later.
Wow.
It looked like it was going to be a typical story about Moore when he eventually sentenced to maximum of 4.5 years for obtaining financial advantage by deception and 3 years for dealing with proceeds of crime to be served concurrently. But no, life smiled upon this bumbling broke man. He spent only 5 months in jail, and on December 1st at appeals court, they overturned his conviction because he had not been deceptive when misappropriating the bank's funds. The bank had made no effort to stop him, and he never tried to mislead them. By being such an inept criminal, Moore had given himself a way out. Today, he only drives an $800 car, and he still lives with his mom. He had to give back all the stuff he bought. He told the Daily Telegraph that he doesn't miss the high life besides the cocaine, the strippers, and the fast cars.
Right? Preach on, brother. Don't we all?
So how crazy is that? Because of the bank's mistake, they're like, he never misled you. It's y'all's fault. Y'all weren't paying attention. He got out.
Yeah.
5 months. I guess he got to spend 5 months.
Yeah, but still, you can't. Like, how are you going to hold it against him?
Yeah.
You know, you'd be like, look, he was just playing along and y'all just wasn't doing nothing. So
that is
super
hilarious,
sorry.
Right?
Super sorry I took all your money.
Well, he had to give it back, but he still had 2 years of fun, right?
Well, I like the fact he didn't give it back. He gave back a driven Maserati. Used cars is what he turned back in.
Yeah.
Man, I'm all right with that.
Luke Moore, man, that guy is awesome.
My hat's off to you, sir. My hat's off to you.
Right.
And I like what he missed. What do you miss? Oh, the strippers and the cocaine. That's
and the fast cars.
Yep, I miss that part of it.
At least being honest. He sounds like an honest guy.
Who don't miss that part of life? Who don't?
Oh, man. Well, before we get out of here, I'd like to mention thanks to our sponsor, Gaia.com. We've mentioned it on all our shows. I really do think if you like the stuff we cover, whether it's UFOs, ancient history, conspiracy theories, or things like that, you're going to like Gaia.com. In fact, I've been watching this new conspiratorial series, and it's hosted by a guy named Sean Stone. And on it, he's got this guy, and his name's Field McConnell. And he starts drawing these correlations between 9/11 and the missing Malaysian flight. You remember that? The MH370 that they've never been able to find. He starts going in there, and he starts showing how, I don't want to believe it, but it looks like some people in government actually kind of knew that 9/11 was happening. They may not have knew it was that day, but they knew something like that was going to happen. And he also starts showing these correlations, showing that he believes some people in our government knew that this MH370 was going to happen.
Really?
And it is pretty cool, showing that these nefarious groups of whatever you want to call them, the shadow government, may be responsible for both of these incidents. And it's very cool. And like I said, here's a small clip. Let's listen to it.
The cargo manifest of 370 has never been released to the public. In the case of 370, they had 20 individuals who were engineers with Freescale, which is the previous Motorola, and they had the intellectual property on a patent for the electronic stealthing of any large aircraft, such as a 777 or B-52. And when those people were lost, a person whose last name is Rothschild was the other name on the patent, and he inherited the patent because the patent had been approved until after the 8th of March of 2014, when 370 was allegedly lost. But your question wasn't about 370, it was about 17. And wasn't it odd? Yes, it was very odd, but something you probably don't know, I'm sure none of your listeners know, is that before I traveled to Malaysia, they asked me to come down. They asked me on the 22nd of March. I left Minneapolis on the 15th of April. Before leaving on the 29th of March, I told them in writing that if they didn't publicize the two mechanisms, the BUAP and the ATI, they should fully expect to suffer a second explosive event by 1900 hours on the 17th of July. At approximately 1735 on the 17th of July, Malaysia 17 went down after it was taken off course and flown into contested airspace in the vicinity of Donetsk, Ukraine. And why was this necessary and how did I predict it? I predicted it only because all of these flying events are part of a pattern that's been going on for a long time. And it's the same perpetrators and it's the same mechanisms. In the case of Malaysia 17, I predicted that. And, you know, people can judge for themselves how I predicted it. I only predicted it because it's a pattern. And when it went down, that started a firefight or a food fight between Malaysia, the Dutch, the Ukrainians, and the Russians. Hmm. Notice I didn't say the United States. The United States played a part in that, too, I'm confident.
So there you go. If you're interested in seeing that, you have to sign up for Gaia. Now, Gaia is an ad-free streaming service, kind of like Netflix or Hulu. And they've got all types of things of their films, documentaries, and they even got different sections for even transformation, spiritual growth, yoga, things like that. There's over 7,000 exclusive videos. And my favorite, of course, is the Seeking Truth area where I've been watching all these documentaries on these crazy things. Now, there's three offers if you want to join. There's a three-month plan, there's a monthly plan, and an annual plan. Of course, the bigger the plan that you sign up for, the cheaper it is. But basically, you're looking at about $9.95 a month. If you buy the full annual plan, it'll be less than that. It'll be about $7.95 a month. So it's kind of like the service we offer for Expanded Perspectives Elite. It's $5 a month, or if you sign up for the full year, it's only $55. If you have any gnome sightings of your own or little people sightings and you'd like to share them with me and Cam, please feel free to email the show, expandedperspectives@yahoo.com. You can always call the show, 817-945-3828. And please, if you haven't already, go on iTunes or any of the podcatchers and write the show a review. It really helps us out. Cam, what do you got? What are you going to be working on this week?
Man, I'm trying to just beat the weather and get everything done before the vacation times start, where we start rolling stuff together.
Yeah, I've got multiple school plays to go to. I got the big boys play is like on Thursday, and Luke's doing a play on Tuesday. So I'm going to be videotaping that. In fact, I need to speak to you about videoing in low light, some settings on my camera.
Word?
But, for you elite members, we'll be speaking to you again on Thursday or Friday. For everybody else, we'll talk to you next Monday. I'm Kyle Filson. He's Cam Hale.
Peace, y'all.
Luxury apartments. If you're in the market, listen, brand new luxury apartments. Champion has a new property, River Park of Dublin, which is a mile south of Dublin. Location is everything. Spacious 1, 2, and 3 bedroom homes, designer finishes, resort style amenities, exceptional customer service. That's Champion. Champion's brand new luxury apartments, River Park of Dublin. Now do something about it. Visit livewithchampion.com. Livewithchampion.com.
One of the largest Star Wars fan collections in the world is coming to Kosai. Unofficial Galaxies opens on May 10th, and this is a one-of-a-kind exhibition with iconic characters, props, legendary ships, costumes, and behind-the-scenes secrets. It's going to be a must-see whether you're a hardcore Star Wars fan or just curious about one of the most famous sci-fi franchises of all time. Unofficial Galaxies is coming to Kosai starting on May 10th. So get your tickets now at kosai.org.
Legends, the greatest social casino experience has arrived at Legends.com. With thousands of the best free-to-play casino-style games, chances to earn millions of bonus coins and win real money. Legends is revolutionizing the Vegas experience wherever you are. If you love winning, then you'll love playing at Legends.com. Legends is a free-to-play social casino. Void where prohibited. Play responsibly. Visit Legends.com for more information. Legends with a Z.com is legendary fun.